Hi, everyone. This is Achyut Dibhava from Nightlight Astrology. Happy Monday, everybody. Today, I'm doing a live cast here, and I'm going to be talking about Venus's upcoming opposition to Uranus from Scorpio to Taurus. That's going to be a big focus for the day. But I'm also going to open up for some live Q&A. It's been a while since I've done a Q&A episode, so I figured we'd do one today. So if you have questions, feel free to put them into the chat box as we go. And I'd be happy to take them as we go along. Let me move this over a little bit. Got to get Narnia in the shot there. So and I always like to hear when I'm doing live casts where you're all coming in from as well. So as you are listening to this, as you're tuning in, I'd love to see you put into the live chat. Tell me where you're from. It's always interesting to see where people are coming from. All right, so before I dive into talking about Venus's opposition to Uranus, which is a big transit this week that is coming up as we also have eclipse season upon us, it sort of culminates and then we get an eclipse. So I might talk a little bit about the eclipse, but I'm going to save some of that for later. But before I go into all of this, I want to remind everybody that I am now in the last 40 days of the year, which those of you guys who have followed me for a long time know is my fundraising season. So for the last 40 days of the calendar year, I ask people to pitch in and support my work if you enjoy it. I'm going to put the link to my Kickstarter into the comments section. It'll be in the comments section of the post after the live Q&A is done as well. So if you're able to support my work, I really appreciate it. Fundraise for 40 days. You can pick up a bunch of different rewards, some exclusive lectures that I offer through the Kickstarter. There's over 50% off all of my online courses in 2021. So if you're thinking, hey, sometime in 2021, I wanted to sign up for Achyuta's Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic course, I run two programs per year, one in June and one in November. You can pick up tuition through my Kickstarter to either of those programs for over 50% off. And that's the best deal I run. I run it every year. So you could, you know, if you wanted to wait till 2022, hopefully next year I'll be here doing this and you could always do it then. But it's always the cheapest time of year to pick up one of my classes. My Horary, my year two class, are also on sale for over 50% off through the Kickstarter. So just like different ways that I have of trying to say thank you to folks. There's some readings. There's a limited number of mini readings that I do for people that I actually record. And then one of the more popular ones that I'm doing this year is a full-on reading for the whole of 2021, both on the mundane level and, say, for your rising sign. So you can pick up your Aries horoscope for all of 2021 and get a breakdown of the biggest transits of the year based on your rising sign or your sun sign. So there's a bunch of cool stuff that I offer. I ring the bell like this, you know, at this time of year. So you'll hear me doing this between now and New Year's, basically New Year's Eve up until midnight. You have to donate, just so that you guys are aware. Our backer goal this year, we're always trying to outdo last year's total. Last year, we rallied the support of 690 backers, which was awesome. The year before that, to give you an idea, was like 390. So we went up like 300 last year, which was like way more than we were, you know, expecting. This year, our goal is to just break last year's record. If we can get to 691, then we will have outdone last year's funding record. So anyway, thank you for bearing with me. We're right now, by the way, we are at 98 backers. So you could be the one to push us across 100. So we have a ways to go already, but doing well out the gate. Started it over the weekend. All right, so I'm going to post it into the chat one more time. There's the Kickstarter link. Thank you all for your support. I really appreciate it. It's fun to make content like this year round. 2020 has been like, I don't know, probably the craziest year of astrological work I've ever done in terms of what I've seen from transits. And I mean, yeah, even though I have been writing and talking about, say, Saturn and Pluto, or Saturn, Jupiter, and Pluto and Capricorn for at least 5 years, you know, who knew what it would actually turn out like. So I'm also excited for creating content in 2021 based on the idea that things are going to tone down a little bit, you know, like, but we have Saturn and Uranus in 2021 in a square with each other all year. Jupiter-Saturn conjunction at the very start of the, you know, the winter solstice here in the Northern Hemisphere. Like, there's still some really big transits in 2021 as well. So should be interesting. In the week ahead, what we're dealing with is Venus in Scorpio moving into an opposition with Uranus and Taurus. So let's talk about that and try to get a sense of what that's all about and what you can expect. Now, remember that we are closing in on a full moon and a lunar eclipse. The reason that I say that is because transits that happen right before an eclipse are not normal transits. If there is, you know, you get a Venus dynamic with Uranus, like it's not like a super rare transit. Venus moves very quickly, right? So as Venus is whipping around the zodiac, you're going to get a conjunction, a square, an opposition, a conjunction, and back. Its synodic cycle with Uranus repeats quite frequently. You know, at least you're going to think about probably like, you know, between a year and two. If I'm just off the top of my head, I'd have to do the math or just calculate it a little bit more. But you're going to see aspects from Venus to Uranus more frequently. And the point is that you aren't going to see it that frequently happening right before an eclipse. So any transit that is a faster moving, it's dynamic. You're going to want to pay attention to it for a week of your life. But it's not a long-standing Saturn-Pluto conjunction. It's not a long-standing, you know, Jupiter-Pluto-Saturn triple conjunction. Those are the ones that make headlines in astrology because they last so long. These faster-moving transits don't. And so they're the kinds of things I break down week by week for you guys just to give you a sense of what's happening in a more up-to-the-minute kind of way. But when one of those faster-moving transits happens right before an eclipse, you are getting a big signal as to what that eclipse is going to be about, because it's most likely that the transits that happen right before it are the ones that are triggering some aspect or element of what the eclipse is going to signify. So just to give you an idea of how close this is, let's see here. So the perfection of the aspect from Venus is basically happening at the end of this week into Friday. Okay, that would be the November 27th. Should make Thanksgiving interesting if you're here in the U.S. But then you go just a couple of days later to, say, Sunday, and you're getting the lunar eclipse in Gemini. So make sure I've got that right. Hold on, let me just... 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, you're going to get... It's like, it depends on where you are. It perfects here like 3 a.m. in Minneapolis, around 3 a.m. on Monday, November 30th. So it's like Sunday night into Monday. But so Friday, you've got Venus Uranus, and then by Sunday into Monday morning, you have the eclipse in Gemini. So an eclipse is going to mean something different for everyone. Eclipses are very contextual. They have to do with, you know, the house that they're landing in your chart, planets that they're closely conjoined to in your chart. A lunar eclipse, like the one that we're coming up to, has the signification of endings. So where is something reaching a stage of completion, culmination, finality, resolution? It's like the moment when, you know, a couple months ago, I took my kids to an apple orchard, not far from where we live in the Twin Cities. And we were at the apple orchard, and, you know, everything was blooming in terms of the apples, right? It was just like they were going nuts. And what was interesting was that, you know, when we came back to get pumpkins for Halloween, I think we went in like September, and then we went to get pumpkins like later in October, closer to Halloween. And sections that we had gone through were like, they were done, you know, and then other things were blooming. And I was thinking when we were there and I was walking, like, that's a great image for what the material world is like when it comes to karma. There's things that just pop up and they become very radiant, like the fall colors. They suddenly appear, but then very quickly it's gone. And then you're on to the next thing. A lunar eclipse is like a major signal of some big, you know, rush of color followed by the leaf drop. That's what lunar eclipses are doing. I had a teacher that originally talked about them, Rebecca Gordon, as a door closing. And that's another image that's always stuck with me. So the best thing to do, we're going to break down that eclipse later in the week in depth, but the best thing to do is to imagine, okay, there is an ending that's happening, a piece of closure, completion and closure kind of simultaneously. a blossoming of karma that has its roots in the past somewhere. And what, for example, I just found out, okay, this is it's happening in my second house. And I found out today that we bank back in Maryland, the bank that we use doesn't have any locations here in the Twin Cities, which is weird. We don't go to physical branch locations very much, you know, because everything's online. So I just found out that I'll be having to switch my accounts over to someplace that I can go to in person here in Minnesota. They don't have our bank here in Minnesota. So that was such a very beautiful and basic example of the transit that is about to happen in, say, a person's second house, where there may be some period of completion or closure around like money or finances. We'd have to switch everything over to a different bank. Okay, that's such a lunar eclipse moment in the second house. Is it the biggest thing in the world? No, but it's a lot of hassle. You know what I mean? Like, that's a lot of, like, I don't know, you guys know how it is when you have kids and COVID and you have to go into a bank and do all this stuff. And it can be a lot. So anyway, you know, first world problems, as they say, I guess, like, it's not the end of the world or anything, but it's, so that is a good example of what kind of things you'll see around a lunar eclipse. And some of them are a lot more painful and difficult or inconvenience, you know, than others. It doesn't even have to be negative. You know, the lunar eclipse, though it may signal endings, can also mean finality and completion, there's a way in which when the color burst comes, it's like the grand finale of a fireworks display. So you sometimes get that feeling around lunar eclipses as well. Okay, so that's what the lunar eclipse means in general. Then we have to say, what does it mean that Venus is opposing Uranus right before it happens? Because that then tones the eclipse and gives you a sense of what kind of events are likely to coincide with the eclipse. Well, Venus opposite Uranus with a lunar eclipse following it would probably signify the potential for the breaking of relationships. Why? Because Uranus loves independence and freedom. And when it opposes Uranus, it tends to pull people in relationships apart from one another. It's like a band that breaks up because the lead singer wants to go in his or her own direction. You know, I'm going to go do my own creative thing right now. And so I'm breaking apart from the group. Venus opposite Uranus can point to the need for greater independence, agency, autonomy, and so forth, which can suddenly shift working partnerships, business partnerships. It can signal a need for something outside of the ordinary, which will sometimes lead to affairs or cheating or, you know, things like that. Not always good, of course. But so relationships can break up with Venus opposite Uranus followed by a lunar eclipse. Not always right away, because lunar eclipses signal completion, but often the completion doesn't happen all at once. It's like the rush of color. It takes a couple of weeks. Well, in astro speak, it might take a couple of months. But you're looking at that, look at the whole sign house of Gemini in your chart, and then look at that Taurus Scorpio axis in your chart. If you use, it's especially easy if you use whole sign houses, then the topics are very clear. So that is one possibility right now. If I had to make a, you know, if I'm making a short list, which I do before I write these talks, right? At the top of my list today is, look, relationships are about to be altered, recreated, reinvented, or terminated because people are feeling the urge to go in a different creative direction or seek a different kind of relationship or seek a different kind of maybe experience. Now, Venus opposite Uranus can also be a point in time where there is a personal departure from, say, a certain kind of style that you've had for a long time of your, even things, I always say this, but as mundane as your wardrobe or the decor in your house or your office or, you know, whatever the case might be, the need to reinvent and recreate one's style or appearance physically, artistically, etc., can be quite strong with Venus opposite Uranus. You do have to be aware of the like Frankenstein effect where you try to recreate something and you turn it into a monster because there's some underlying like twisted motivations, or, you know, it's a weird one where like when people ask me, should I get a plastic surgery with Venus and Uranus involved in transits in the birth chart, for example, I'm always like, no, you know, like, because I've seen so many times that those are the time periods where someone wants to have some kind of corrective aesthetic surgery or something like that. And it doesn't end up looking good, especially if the underlying motivation was like, let me look sexier or better. And it's vanity that's fueling it, which is not the case for everyone. I'm not saying that it is at all, but if that's the underlying motivation, insecurity, fear, attempt to, you know, be someone or look like something you're not, the Venus Uranus signature can end up making a person look or feel really unnatural in like a, in kind of like a disturbing way. It's like getting a really bad tattoo. I wouldn't necessarily recommend Venus Uranus for tattoo work, for example. Now that's not 100%. There are times where Venus Uranus can represent, you know, some kind of artistic innovation, and reconfiguring the aesthetic of something doesn't have to be, doesn't have to end in something looking ugly. It's just, you really want to check your intentions around what you're altering and why. The same thing can be said in romantic relationships. And this is another top one on my list, right? Relationships breaking up, and the potential for people to seek quick fixes or quick satisfaction of desires. A very sparkly person enters your life, and there's a very quick, rapid love affair that dissolves just as quickly as it comes together. Classic Venus Uranus. A person says, I guess I'm polyamorous. You know what I mean? Oh, Uranus happens to be transiting your natal Venus. And I'm saying this, you know, kind of sarcastically. I don't mean any offense to anyone, but it's like, we'll see how that lasts in about 2 years once Uranus is done with Venus. You know, it's like a lot of what Uranus introduces is in the name of some kind of freedom or emancipation, or there's like a rebellious or defiance quality to a defiant quality to it. But it's hard to say whether or not it will last. One of the interesting things that we're dealing with in the year ahead is going to be Saturn and Uranus in a square with one another. When Venus gets involved with that dynamic in 2021, which we'll be unpacking a few times in 2021, that's going to be a whole different story, because then you have a kind of a counterbalance in Saturn to Uranus that Venus would be dealing with. But right now, with just the straight up Venus Uranus dynamic, you can think of the more traditional kind of rebellious aura of Uranus being really strong and not checked necessarily by anything more grounding. At any rate, this dynamic is also, remember that as we're leading up to the full moon and the lunar eclipse, one thing that's going to happen, just push my clock ahead here. We're also, let me just push it ahead a day. There we go. We're also going to see by Friday, the moon enters Taurus. And as the moon enters Taurus and opposes Venus and conjoins Uranus, it's also stimulating this. So the waxing moon is actually going to, not only does it eclipse right after it, but it's actually there triggering the actual opposition itself. That is another telltale sign that this transit is going to be stronger than your garden variety transit. When the moon cycle is involved and it's closely pushed up next to the aspect, and the moon actually participates in the perfection of the Venus-Uranus aspect, that's powerful. And it's an exalted moon as well. Another thing that can come up is sometimes there's going to be, like, especially for like Venusian topics, not just love and romance, but say things like women, sisters, the goddess, that the Venus-Uranus dynamic can represent, for example, meeting a quirky, interesting new friend. Venus is the general ruler of friends, but Venus, Jupiter a bit too, but Venus, especially women friends, or friends that are going to be, I mean, that's a stereotype a little bit, but it's true. Venus does typically point more towards the dynamics of women, but any kind of relationship that would feature someone that's erratic, interesting, departure from the norm, that stimulates or inspires, you know, your creative juices, like that's good. Venus opposite Uranus can also be a time for people to come out or to transition, or to be dealing with the reality of a sexual, like a person in your life whose sexual orientation is not something that you're used to. Like for a family that's, you know, maybe more conservative, to have a kid in their family come out, right? That kind of thing can happen under Venus Uranus too, as can the increase of the topics like, you know, feminism, women's rights, LGBTQ stuff in a just a broad sense, because you have that emancipatory quality that often is associated with things like activism in Uranus, and then Venus, which is related to sexuality. So those topics can also, they might be amped up somehow, in which case then you have to read that lunar eclipse as signaling some kind of completion, closure, moment that would be closely related to what Venus and Uranus is doing or saying about love or sexuality in a general sense. Let's see. So the only other thing that comes to my mind is Venus opposite Uranus can also be an indication of someone or something that suddenly disturbs the peace. We have a debilitated Venus right now in Mars's sign. Mars has just turned direct. Mars is gradually heading into the square with Pluto. So there is maybe a little bit of an underlying impulse to shake things up and sort of disturb the peace in ways that are more aggressive. Venus is going to try to keep the peace, but can't help. Some of the funniest images pop into my head sometimes. I was just thinking about how yesterday I was telling my daughter that she had to wait for this little gummy. She takes like a little gummy vitamin, and she loves it because it's, you know, the gummy vitamins are basically like candy, but it gets kids to eat their vitamins. So anyway, she's waiting for this gummy, and she's sitting there on the couch, and I was like, just give me a second. And I look over and she's like starting to, you know, twist and undulate. And I'm just like, she just could not hold it together, you know? And I was thinking about how it's funny that we, you know, we're trained to hold together our natural urges. But then I started thinking about how it's really no different from me, you know? Admittedly, I'm something of a closet sports fan. I feel embarrassed because it's something that I feel like is a kind of an utter waste of time. No offense to other people. That's how I feel about my own habit. And so I'm like, I'm basically the same, you know, if I know that whatever, there's a playoff game on or something like that, I'm like, oh, I get, and I'm just like, you just don't want to, I don't want to work anymore. I want to whatever. So we may feel like we don't show it as much, but you know, I just, seeing my daughter do that, and I was like, yeah, I know, that's how I'm feeling about watching the Vikings game this afternoon. So, but that's Venus Uranus too, where there's just this jittery quality to it, where you can feel just sort of like you're coming out of your own skin, or you're just sort of anxious. And it's a little, you know, I don't know, don't mean any disrespect to use this word, but it has a little bit of a manic feeling to it. So watch for that, and watch for things that like to disturb the peace. The darkest part about this one is that this Venus in the ancient world was associated with places that were tranquil. Talking about theaters, like places that people go to see art, or listen to music, or go to a church service or a temple where there's beauty, and there's kind of a feeling that everyone is there to harmonize together on something. Even supermarkets to a certain extent, they might be kind of mercurial, but that sense of going to a mall or a store or someplace that's sort of beautiful and supposed to be a place that's mostly peaceful. I will say that Whole Foods, if you guys have ever been there, has to be like one of the most, it's like a place where everyone is ready to just drop, like throw down, you know. I think I told you guys at one point that I had someone try to run over me with a shopping cart at Whole Foods one time, because they were trying to illegally pull into the parking spot that was like, I was my turn. I was in line. They were trying to whip around from the opposite direction on a one way and sneak into my spot. I was like, I couldn't believe they were trying it. And I was already halfway in. Anyway, I get out of my car and they were waiting there for me, and they like started charging at me with a shopping cart one time. I was like, it was like one of the craziest things ever. So after that happened to me, a friend of mine was like, oh, you got to see this video. And they sent me this video that was like, it was like a rap song. I think the title of it was It's Getting Real in the Whole Foods Parking Lot. So And it was like perfect. So if you can watch that video. So that's Venus opposite Uranus, though. Like, it is the crazy person at the shopping mall who is going to run their cart into you. Or, you know, Black Friday. Screw Black Friday this week. Screw it. I would not go. First of all, I've never done that. Like, I've never been a Black Friday person. I guess I've bought something online for a Christmas present or something like that. But I do not go. I do not venture out. I'm a Cancer. Please. I'm not venturing out into the world much anyway. I'm sitting around chanting and like writing and talking to all of you about the stars all the time. That's like my life. But like this Black Friday, I'm telling you right now, like I would not be caught dead with Venus opposite Uranus, Venus and Scorpio opposite Uranus and Taurus. Well, everyone is like bringing jackknives to Walmart to get the new PS5 or whatever it is. Like, don't like be careful, because it's like the consumer craziness of Venus opposite Uranus on Black Friday is I'm not going anywhere near it. But that speaks to the even darker reality, which is that sometimes you see that terrorist attack, that public shooting, you know, and so forth. Over the weekend, as Venus is ingressing into Scorpio and opposing Uranus, there was a major mall shooting in Wisconsin, which, you know, is just neighbors to Minnesota, right? And I was like, of course, Venus enters Scorpio, opposes Uranus, and there's a mall shooting right away. Why? Because Venus is in Scorpio, Mars is sign, Mars is heading into the square with Pluto, Venus is opposite erratic Uranus, where people just have to make statements and break the peace. You know, like, so, but there's, you know, that would be like the darkest possibility. There might be a, like, you know, there could be some John and Yoko situations, you know, where some new relationship or some new focus comes into your life that takes you away from a previous creative collaboration. Sorry to blame Yoko. I'm on the train of feeling reveals how I feel about Yoko. Sorry. I love the Beatles. I kind of feel like she had a role. I think she's fine. I don't have anything personally against her, but I feel like that relationship definitely took John Lennon in a different direction. Fine. And that's, you know, God bless them. But my point is that you could definitely get into a situation where, you know, that something comes in, grabs your attention, and takes you away from something that you previously were associated with and now have to break free from. So that's the kind of energy. Watch for it to peak Thursday, Friday, and then watch for the ramifications of that to really have an impact with the upcoming eclipse going into Monday. We'll unpack this more later in the week. That's what I've got for you guys today. I want to remind you all again, while I still have your ear for a second, that my Kickstarter is going until New Year's Eve at midnight. While I was doing this talk, we crossed 100 backers. We're up to 102 backers now of 691 that we're trying to raise. If you guys enjoy this channel, if it's part of your daily, you know, spiritual food or just part of how you entertain yourself, I really appreciate your support. You can donate and receive some different rewards, including over 50% off on all of my courses for 2021. There's some exclusive lectures. There's all sorts of things you could choose from. Anything and everything helps. It's really appreciated. One of the things that I do with the funds from this, I'm going to open up to Q&A in a second, guys. But one of the things that I do with this is I hire a personal assistant. I hire Kat. Kat's, you know, like basically on my staff, like she is my social media, you know, helper. Everything that I do would take me about 3 hours longer every day if it weren't for her at this point. So we have three staffers that we hire from the proceeds of the Kickstarter. In the past, we built a yoga studio. You guys originally, a lot of you guys on YouTube weren't here because I wasn't on YouTube at that point, but, you know, you guys helped us build a almost entirely donation-based yoga studio in Silver Spring, which we ran for a long time. Community herbal medicine garden, where we harvested gardens and gave them away to people in the community, free herbal medicine. You guys helped me make sure that I can make everything that I do with the speaker series totally free while paying the speakers really well. You guys helped me to create diversity scholarships, which will hopefully launch next spring. And also, you guys helped me, over 50 to 60% of my students are on need-based tuition. So there's a lot of things that the Kickstarter allows me to do, And some of it goes to charity as well. Last year, we sent some of the money from the Kickstarter to support the distribution of the Bhagavad Gita to prisoners. So lots of good stuff that we're doing. One of my goals for the next couple of years is to build a donation-based astrology reading clinic so that students who come through my programs who need some experience reading can get that experience, because it's really hard to get it sometimes. And people who couldn't otherwise afford an astrology reading will have a really cheap, like affordable, you know, like when I was a kid, we went to the University of Minnesota here, and the students in dentistry did our dental work, my sister and I. And that was really affordable for my mom because it was either free or really cheap. And the idea of the donation-based reading clinic, which I will not take any profit from whatsoever, will be to give students of astrology from my courses more opportunities to read, while also giving a huge more accessible style and price of reading for people out there. So those are the kinds of things I'm building. Those are the kinds of things that I do. So when you support me, I like to think that you're supporting good things in the world of astrology work that I do. And so thank you for your support. I'm putting the link into the chat box right now. If you're able to support me, thank you very much. You'll hear me ringing the bell between now and the new year. In the meantime, I'm open for Q&A. So I'm going to take a look at the questions now and see what you guys have. All right. Let's see here. Wow. People from Mexico, Southern California, New Jersey, Illinois, SoCal, Milwaukee, France, Louisiana, Boston, Knoxville, San Antonio, Charlotte. Wow. Nice. Love to see where you guys are all coming from. That's really cool. What about those of us with Pluto at or around 7 degrees of Scorpio? Well, it's a pretty significant event if Uranus is opposing your natal Pluto, right? So it's a Pluto Uranus think of the 60s and the revolution and upheaval and darkness, but also kind of purgation that happened culturally, historically during the 60s on all different levels. And you're getting a taste of Uranus and Pluto. If that's happening in your chart right now, there may be a way in which that type of energy is impacting you personally. Yeah. Is Vedic more accurate than Western? No. They're just different systems, you know, different practitioners, different uses of divinatory knowledge. And I'm just not into comparing, you know, the Western versus Eastern in terms of being more accurate, because I've had great readings from practitioners in both fields. It's what speaks to you, you know. And there's really good, smart reasons that people have for doing things in ancient astrology. It's not nearly as idiosyncratic as modern astrology, where it's like, well, I like this because it works. In ancient astrology, the rationale behind why sidereal versus tropical is used is really intelligent. And I believe with that level of intelligence and intentionality that the systems are yielding, they're just like, it's kind of a simple comparison, but I've made it before, and it's like they're different ways of spreading out the tarot cards. There's different ways of looking at the cosmos and using the cosmos that we look at as a mirror. There's like slightly different orientations of doing it. My advice is to kind of stick with one versus the other, because I find that people get most confused when they're like, which one is better, or maybe I'll try to synthesize both. I've found that those things are probably more difficult. So I encourage people to just find what you like, which style, which approach, and stick with it, you know. Emerald Coast, Florida. Thank you, Margo. She likes the Narnia poster. You think my daughter Gigi, she made that one with my wife and her made it. Let's see. Namaste from Atlanta. Right on. Georgia. Georgia, you're where it's at lately. You're the center of the political universe come January 5th. Okay, let's see. I'm having to face telling my kids about my new relationship, and I think it's going to be a big shakeup. Could it represent shocking communication about a love relationship? Absolutely. Yep, you've got it. That would fit the bill. I've noticed with myself and all my friends, Sweetface Camille says, that we have been presented with new partners as of the past month or so, very different from the type we've had in the past. It's been very good. Right, there you go. The out-of-the-box relationship that you, one that's like, it's different than any you've had before. That fits. What is astrology? Can you explain, please? From Fat God 100. No more. That's it. That's all you need to know. I'm sorry. I'm just playing. Oh my God. Astrology is we look at the heavens. We study the patterns of the heavens in order to reflect upon the past, present, and future in our lives here on Earth. That's the gist of it. Good question, though. If you're brand new, I would get it. You'd be like, well, what is this? Let's see. Black Friday is such a hack. Yeah. Just no to Black Friday, right? Sorry for anyone who's like going out on Black Friday. I didn't mean to ruin it for you. I know, like my mom and sister used to have a thing where they'd go out. They didn't get crazy with it, but they would go out and I don't know, they gave away some free stuff at certain stores or something, and they would go out and have fun with it. But they were not crazy. They were not stampeding or really going out to buy anything. They were just going out to have fun. Anyway, COVID and Black Friday. No. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like this is not a good time. Oh God. What if the eclipse is on your birthday? Oh, well, and if it's across your second and eighth house axis, Cami P, that's a pretty, powerful sign of what your year ahead is going to be like if it lands on your solar return chart. And if it's happening in your second and eighth house axis, it would probably be impacting finances, different opportunities financially, or potentially things like debts and loans, different streams of revenue, sharing or dealing with shared money dynamics in your life. But some pretty big changes coming up if that's on your birthday. Thank you for being you. You're a beautiful soul and I admire your authenticity, and thank you for sharing your struggles after surgery. Must be talking to someone else in the chat box because I haven't had a surgery. But think if you are referring to me and you are saying such nice things to me, then thank you. Let's see. How would you describe the chart ruler in the 12th? I have Jupiter in the 12th. Yeah, that's tricky. If your ascendant ruler is in the 12th house, it can mean a number of different things. Depends on the dignity of Jupiter. Depends on aspects being made to Jupiter. Are there any planets in the first house? A lot of things. But having your ascendant ruler in the 12th can mean that there is going to be 12th house-like dimension to your life. A couple of things that come up for 12th house people are sometimes having more of experiencing greater degree of challenge when it comes to just identifying your sense of self or your sense of direction. The 12th house can obscure things a little bit, and so that can be challenging. The 12th house could also refer to some self-destructive patterns or habits, so you'd have to be careful of that. It can also speak to people who are more comfortable with solitude or living or doing things that are slightly more remote. Remember, the 12th house is the joy of Saturn, and sometimes can refer to things that are more isolated, like studying in a library by yourself or something. There's a woman in one of my classes, her name's Elodie. She used to be in one of my classes and she's an astrologer now. And she has like an exalted Saturn in her 12th, which I've talked to her about before publicly and stuff like that. So she'd be okay with me sharing this, that she's lived off the grid for a long time. So sometimes your ascendant ruler in the 12th is just a way of saying that you may live a little detached from the normal worldly places. It's a little bit of it's a world between worlds in the 12th house. So not all bad. And then Jupiter, what houses does Jupiter rule and so forth? You can, depending, you know, that'll play into it, the dignity of Jupiter and things like that. But it's hard to say more without seeing a chart. Let's see. People from South Africa. Great. how is the Uranus-Venus opposition different due to Venus being the ruler of Taurus? Lori asks. Thank you, Lori. Great question. Well, Venus is in the sign opposite to her own sign. And so you have Venus in that alienated position that we call a detriment. Venus likes to be about, say, harmony, peace, and beauty. Mars likes to be about action, conflict, and aggression or competition. So when Venus is in that sign, opposed to her own sign, you're getting the potential for there to be antagonism as a part of the dynamic. Yeah. Antagonism would be like a normal part of the Venus-Uranus doesn't always mean antagonism, but it has more likelihood to involve antagonism in relationships because Venus is in its detriment in Mars's sign. Yeah, good question. I got T-Square, oh, Old Shop Blues Boys. Oh, hey, I'm glad to see you on a live chat. I got T-Squares in houses 2, 5, and 8 next year. Should I buy several parachutes and a good flood raft? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a time where you often see people sell things or buy things of great significance, like more, not just your everyday things, or income changes, or people retire or invest, or, you know, stuff like that. So, but the fifth house should potentially be pretty good. Like that, it's a good thing that the fifth house is in there as well. That's the house of good fortune in ancient astrology. Isabella says, Namaste from British Columbia. Any insights for Pluto on my first and the current future transits? Well, Pluto spends a long time in a first house. So it doesn't necessarily mean anything unless it's making aspects or crossing the degree of the ascendant. That's what I would pay attention to. Let's see. I'm going to scroll down and see which ones I can answer a little bit more quickly. Hello from London here in England. Hi, Linda. Thank you. My word, there's a lot of Uranian energy at the moment, isn't there? Yes. Yeah. Good call. Let's see. Going down a little bit more. From Istanbul. Hello. Can you speak to the solar eclipse falling on one's south node? Well, obviously solar eclipses have the opposite meaning of a lunar eclipse in the sense that they tend to be like new moons. They tend to be more about the seeding of something. If that's on your south node, though, it's the seeding of something. If you go from the kind of Indian tradition, it's going to be the seeding of something very otherworldly or possibly related to possibly something more escapist in nature. Like I've seen solar eclipses on the south node, unfortunately, correspond with people starting up a drug habit. So you have to be careful of that because the south node can be very otherworldly. But sometimes it'll coincide. Like I had eclipses. I had some solar eclipses over the south node in my chart when I basically found my guru. So south node can be otherworldly in a positive sense as well. But it can also be in the kind of esoteric Western tradition associated with diminishment or decrease of something, letting go of something. And that's often the case with the south node. So I would look for a new beginning related with either release, diminishment, decrease, or something maybe a little otherworldly. Yeah, good question. And that came from Mosh. Thank you. Some of these would take too long, so I'm going to have to skip a little bit. I have Uranus in Scorpio, second house. That's from Fangs of May. So that would mean that Uranus in Taurus is opposing from the 8th. Yeah. That's a Uranus opposition, kind of a midlife moment. You think of big changes in midlife, a lot of which will focus on resources. It's a simple, just keep it really simple. It's almost always the better the reading, the simpler and more concise it is. But that's what I would focus on if I were you right now, thinking about those dynamics. Do I believe in Black Moon Lilith? it's not that I don't believe in it. It's just that I don't use it. I don't think that symbols in astrology are either... See, I don't think of symbols in astrology as causing things to happen. I think of them as signs or omens, like tarot cards. And so it would sort of be like asking me if people had come up with an expansion pack of tarot cards. Do you believe in that expansion pack or not? Be like, I have no doubt that if people use that expansion pack, it probably works and it's probably, you know, has a lot of good symbols in it. I just don't use it. So that's how I would answer that question. I just don't use Black Moon Lilith or Chiron or, you know, Asteroids or even Minor Aspects, or I have some tools in my toolkit that I'm really focused on and I really develop them. And my theory about astrology is that it's more important to develop consistency of craft, economy of craft with a couple of things that you're really good at than to bring too many things in and make the mistake really of thinking that my reading will get more objectively accurate if I have more and more things, which is buying into this idea that our astrology needs to be somehow this pure objective material science that includes everything that's in the sky. Once we understand astrology is actually a form of divination, we don't need that. The patterns of the sky are the lock of the divinatory language, and you can add more to it, but you don't have to add more to it to do just amazing work just as well as you might if you added more. So that's where I stand on it. And that's why in the programs that I teach, I'm very adamant that I want students to practice within certain, you know, parameters and structures so that they can develop that consistency and conciseness with craft language, which I see a lot of people getting really overwhelmed by when they study modern astrology, because there's just so much that you could throw at a chart. People are like, well, how and when and why do you throw what? And how do all these things fit together? And there's really no good answer for that. Ancient astrology is a lot simpler, and all of the pieces have reasons for being there and of relating to one another, at least compared to a lot of the things in modern astrology. So that's why I'm drawn to it, because it helps me, because when I look at a chart, otherwise I tend to get paralysis by analysis. Anyway, that was a digression. I certainly have no ill will towards people who use things that I don't. It's just, that's my jam. That's how I do it. Let's see. Does Venus and Pluto conjunctions always indicate a shakeup in relationships? No, but they certainly have a good track record of doing that, but not always. Hola from Los Angeles. Hola. If you have your midheaven and north node in Aquarius, ninth house, will change in someone's life most likely occur when Saturn and Jupiter enter Aquarius? Oh yeah, that's a big one. If you've got your, you know, if you have your north node and midheaven in Aquarius, when Jupiter and Aquarius ingress next month, as well as when they cross by degree, those are going to be, circle that with your highlighter. Those are big times. Transiting Uranus opposition to natal Uranus conjunct ascendant. How do you differentiate between necessary changes and restless energy? Wow, that's a good question. This is from Helena. If you have natal Uranus conjunct your ascendant, the likelihood is that, you know, you're very familiar with Uranus already. You're familiar with that restless quality, and you probably know the difference between making impulsive, rebel without a cause kinds of decisions in your life and those that are, you know, wiser or more reflective. You know when you're just like twitching to go do something because there's a destructive impulse, and when there's a more creative, constructive impulse coming through. So I think the only way that one can develop that awareness, if one doesn't already have it, is through some kind of spiritual practice every day, a place where you can be purposefully reflective and contemplative and start to see and notice the patterns and be really honest with yourself in a kind of neutral, mindful space. That's why meditation is so good. Mantra meditation, that's the best in my opinion, but you know, so hopefully that's helpful. When challenging yourself to journal in order to self-learn the vibes of transits, do you have a suggestion on the setup? Know the transits coming or journal and review what transits occur? Journal and review what transits occur. Don't try to set it up in a one-to-one way. Journal and review. That's my advice. Good question from Lena. Thank you. Or Lana? Lena? Lana? Let's see. Jupiter and Saturn, Lauren says, are about to conjunct my sun, 2 degrees Aquarius, sixth house. My sun trines my midheaven by 3.57 degrees, separating. How can I expect the upcoming ingress and conjunction to play out? Well, first of all, if it conjuncts your son, think about things that might be happening with your father, with men or patriarchal-like figures, or possibly CEOs or bosses, all sun stuff that can come up. But then outside of that, think in terms of life path changing significantly when any slower moving planets can join the sun, as the sun is a general indicator of life's action and arc. So big changes, kind of a new beginning, maybe a little bit of an austere new beginning in the sixth house with Saturn there as well. A lot of hard work, increased responsibility, stuff that may pay off though, or may have a lot of benefits to it with Jupiter there. Maybe greater recognition, notoriety, some furthering of your abilities or skills, but maybe also the theme of austerity and hard work involved again with the sixth. So that's just a kind of a quick take, but hopefully that's helpful. Thank you, Achuta from Fangs of May, who we spoke to earlier. I quit my corporate job, started your year one program, moving to another state and starting a Reiki practice, all within a 10-month period. Cap, Sun, Cancer, Moon. Oh, well, you're getting lit up by Pluto too. Wow. Yeah. Thoughts on a draconic birth chart from David? It's not in my wheelhouse to speak on, because it's never, just not something that I've ever gotten into. Quite Bright says, hi, Achuta. I'm taking your first year course from Australia. Just wanted to let you know I'm really enjoying the course and learning so much. Thanks to you and Delia. Oh, thank you. I'm glad. If there's any way that I can ever help you, just reach out and email. I'm super happy to help people through the course. I'm glad people are liking it. It's been really fun so far, and I definitely couldn't do it without Delia, which is why, cling, 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 donate to the Kickstarter if you haven't already. I could really use your help, and Delia helps me with everything. I don't go insane with the amount of questions that I get from the audience every day and all sorts of stuff that her and Kat help me with. And that comes straight from the Kickstarter every year. That's how I, it's a big part of how I run this operation. So I'm going to put the link in if you haven't already. Feel free to donate. Really appreciate your support. Okay, let's see. I think Helena says, thank you, Achuta. Yes, I'm familiar with Uranian energy, but this transit is something else. I practice meditation and yoga. I'm loving your course. Oh, awesome. Yeah, I mean, Uranus is something else. Like, just to give you guys a sense of when Uranus squared my sun from Aries to Cancer, I went to a baseball game one night. I have this habit. I don't know why I'm telling you guys. I have this habit of going. I really, really like going to movies and sporting events completely by myself. I like going to movie theaters and watching movies by myself. I've been like that since I was 16 years old. It's been something I've really enjoyed. I like going to not concerts, but I like going to sporting events, especially baseball games, by myself. I find that, oftentimes I'll bring like a little flip pad notebook with me, and I'll just write about observations that I have about people and human experience in general while sitting in a stadium packed full of people, most of whom are like loaded on beer or something, you know, watching a game. There's a weird Zen state that I get, especially at baseball games by myself. But at any rate, I went to a baseball game by myself, and when Uranus was square to my sun, and I kind of wondered, like, should I go to a public place with Uranus square my sun, Uranus, you know, like maybe there's some kind of violence, or I was like, yeah, I'm not going to live in fear. So I just went to the baseball game, and this was at a time in my life where I had cut caffeine out of my life for some years, but had just recently opened myself back up to black tea, and like in the morning, you know, and there, I was really, really thirsty. It was really, really hot. It was the summertime in DC, and I was at a Nationals game, and I went and got an iced tea. And after I drank it, like, I felt fine, and it had felt pretty weak to me. Like, this doesn't feel like it has any caffeine in it. So good. I'll go get another one. I ended up having, over the course of like a 4-hour game or whatever, I ended up having 3 iced teas, which is crazy for me. Like, that doesn't ever happen. And then, as I was walking back to my car, it suddenly was like all of the caffeine from 3 iced teas hit me at once. And I was awake for the next 24 hours. Like I could not go to sleep to save my life for the next 24 hours. During that time, and this part I'll keep private, but about three or four really, really pivotal personal insights about myself, my life, my psyche, you know, my habits, my behaviors came through like billboards from the universe, just like, whew, here it is. And it was the most erratic. It felt like I had been plugged into a wall. And that was right when Uranus was perfecting to my sun. So when Uranus wants to plug you in, I mean, maybe Uranus will use some caffeine, so be careful. It was maybe only a couple of weeks after that I cut caffeine again entirely. And that was the last time that I had caffeine as well. Well, I had some after that, but it was like within a few weeks. And that was the last time I had caffeine. That was back in, I want to say like 2016 or 17 or something. And then, of course, when I got into bhakti and took my vows, one of the vows involves no drugs or substances, including alcohol and caffeine. So caffeine went out of my life. And not to say I don't condemn anyone from anything, but just that was part of my vows. So that's Uranus, though, right? Uranus can just plug you in and shake you around. And sometimes there's not a lot you can do. My daughter had Uranus on the moon in her chart. And basically the day that happened, this was last year, my wife got this stomach virus and she had the chills so bad that like for a day, she was just like shaking it like uncontrollably and had to go to the ER. And we think she might've even had COVID. This was like February. But it was right as COVID was probably more present here than we think it was, or than people were saying it was. Anyway, so she was like shaking like uncontrollably. And there was Uranus on her moon and square to my daughter's moon. So my daughter was watching her mother like shake, you know. And that was just like such a vivid physical picture of the Uranus moon dynamic. And then she, you know, she ended up being okay. It was like a 24-hour thing. So maybe not COVID, but it was definitely scary. And I couldn't believe how physical it was. Uranus moon transits are also really difficult when it comes to sleep. Like they'll just disturb the crap out of your sleep patterns. I've noticed that when Uranus was on my moon in Capricorn, it was like for like a year of my life, I just couldn't sleep. Weird. And then it went off and I was fine. So anyway, it is not too late to sign up for my course, Kat. Good question. No. But you can't use the Kickstarter discount on the session that's already started. The Kickstarter discounts are only for my classes in 2021. So it would probably be worth it for you in that sense to wait at this point. But if you really wanted to sign up, you could, and, just reach out. My email is info@nightlightastrology.com. Let's see. Thank you, Kayla. I appreciate your donation. That's really nice of you. Thank you. Would electronics bought on this transit be problematic? If they were somehow Venusian, like I want the red PS5, I've been hearing about this just by virtue of watching the sports game, and this new PS5 is coming out. And so I order a red one, but they send me a white one or something like that. I could see snafus around things like colors or styles or, you know, something more aesthetic probably with the technology would be a guess. yeah. Karen says it's like having a few beers and standing up and realizing you're tipsy. Good description of Uranus. Yeah. It's like it's a little all over the place. Old Shop Boy says, try Bigelow green teas with pomegranate or blueberry. Has no caffeine. Really awesome green tea I have every morning and even in the evening. See, the nice thing about having, you know, an herbalist for a wife is that she's always, there's always something witchy and really tasty going on in the kitchen with herbs and teas and all sorts of stuff. So even more than teas, the infusions that she makes are the things that I really love. Well, she'll make a nettles infusion or something with rose or, you know, and in a mason jar, let it sit under the moon at night, you know, and then gulp that down. That's pretty awesome. By the way, That reminds me, I forgot to mention that my wife is also, her herbal apprenticeship is also on sale through the Kickstarter. So you guys can also check that out. She's been teaching it for almost 10 years now. She's her master's in clinical herbal medicine. She's a really good teacher. So if you're interested in studying herbs, you can also check that out. Her class starts in January online. And it's a group of, right now, I think there's only 30 or 40 people registered. And she has a cap on hers. Mine are like more like bigger groups that take my courses. My wife's courses are still really like personal and intimate, because a lot of the way you study herbal medicine, it's not something that translates to a larger forum as easily like astrology does. But my wife and I are hoping to, we both really miss, after closing our yoga studio, we miss in-person teaching. So one of our long-term goals through the Kickstarter is to buy a piece of land here and develop a space that could be, say, you know, very close to, you know, the airport here in the Twin Cities. People can fly in and we can have like an annual retreat, or maybe a retreat or two per year, so that people can come and study herbs, yoga, and astrology, like, and actually have some physical contact, because it's, you know, online is great, but you know, it's like, I miss working with people in person too. So, okay. That's what I've got for today. We're right at an hour, so I'm going to stop here. Thank you all so much for, your support. I really appreciate it. I think we broke 100 while I was giving this talk today, which is absolutely fantastic. Thank you guys for your support. And I'll look forward to more content this week. In case you missed it over the weekend, I published the 10th part of the 10 Things I've Learned in 10 Years series. So if you missed that, look back, because it accidentally got published early. And then when I published it, when it was actually time for it to be published, it slipped into the backstream a little bit. So if you want to see the 10th and final part of that series that I did, you can find that in my channel. I published it on Saturday or Sunday. Thank you guys for really great questions today, and for your support. As always, really appreciate it. We'll see you guys again soon.